This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Gonna stomp your little lassies and Prada, she's a me, honey.
John Callio, will you go around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas! Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore!
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a club?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
Decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is broke back mouth.
What's wrong?
Nothing. You good?
No. I'm seeing good. And you ain't it. And stop putting your head down in my house. You know my rule. It's all love and all pride in this house. You feel me? I can't hear you. Do you feel me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel you.
All right.
That was a clip from Moonlight. You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, and Moonlight is the remarkable new film from writer-director Barry Jenkins. Rolling Stone called it a masterpiece, Playlet called it an historic achievement, and The Hollywood Reporter said that it will strike plangent chords for anyone who has ever struggled with identity or to find connections in a lonely world. So tonight, we are celebrating Moonlight and looking at it for an hour. Gina, Alan... Alan, we're not joined by Alan.
Speak up, Alan.
Yeah, Alan.
Conrad, you've taken Alan's seat. How are you?
Welcome back. Thanks. Lovely to be here.
Are you both excited?
I love this film.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this next hour. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Now, we should say it's going to be a big hour because coming up later in the program, Conrad, is your and my interview with Barry Jenkins, the award-winning writer and director of this film.
Who's still a novice.
Yes.
My goodness. And we saw this last week with Lion.
I mean, it just goes to show that a fresh filmmaker can make remarkably good films.
Yeah.
And this is a remarkably good film. It's a searing film. It's an aggressive film. It's a bold film. And it will evoke emotions from its audiences.
And it really took him a long time to get from his first feature to this one. He did all these great things in between. But this story meant so much to him that he actually spent a lot of time on it. And even though it was filmed so quickly in that kind of, low budget, I guess, way. It looks like a masterpiece in lots of ways. It's visually beautiful, but you can see there's so much time and effort and love put into it. I think it's going to be a really interesting one for him to follow up.
And can I say, I think masterpiece is the best way to describe it. And I know some people will look at this as an art house film, and that puts off an audience. But my goodness, a mainstream audience will fall in love with this film. Yep. So much about it is it's easily relatable to a much broader audience. I really hope people don't think of it as an art house film and think, no, I can't go and relate to that. And I strongly encourage a female audience to go and see this film as well. I adored it.
I think the really remarkable thing about the film is that writer-director Barry Jenkins has said it's a very personal story. It's a very particular story. And that's true. It's true for him. And it's true of the playwright, Terrell Alvin McCraney, who wrote In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue, which this film is based on. It's true. It's a very particular story. It's about black people growing up in Miami. But there is something remarkably universal about this story as well that everyone all around the world is relating to, which is why it has elicited such a strong reaction from critics everywhere. And that's why, I mean, it is one of the main contenders for this year's Academy Awards.
And well-deserved. And let's hope we saw it. Well, we see a better result than we did at the Golden Globes. La La Land did pick up many awards, but I think this is a far stronger film, and I really hope it does.
But it's As aggressive in a film film as it is, it's a smaller film and it's a quieter film.
Yes.
But it has something very strong to say and very important and very timely. And that's something that's been talked about a lot. It's true, and Barry Jenkins has said this, that the film was conceived and indeed production started on the film before the whole Oscar So White imbroglio last year. But it does kind of reflect the social milieu and the political milieu in a very kind of interesting way.
Well, I liked how we were talking about the film, as we like to do, often before the show, and we're kind of saying, where, you know, what was it about this film that is kind of different and Oscar-worthy? And you'd brought up, we were talking about a diner scene earlier and how it was a bit different. And he was wanting to show things on screen that he had not seen himself, on the screen. And that's what I kind of, and I think that's what's fresh about it. Here's a filmmaker saying, I don't see myself represented at in this film or in films, and so I'm going to start putting that up on the screen.
Oh, look, the film is about representation. Yeah. There can be no doubt that this is a film that is strongly linked to the ideas of representation and also the idea of identity. This is a film about identity. So we should actually say this film is about a young black boy growing up in Miami. It charts his life in three very distinct vignettes, which are actually titled throughout the films. And I think the titles are really interesting and notable, actually. Yeah. So the first one is Little, because he's called Little. Mm. The second one is Chiron, because he's called Chiron. That's actually his name. Mm. And the third one is Black. And all of these names, I mean, the idea of a name really takes on central importance in this film, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it's the evolution of Chiron and the way that what seem like small experiences throughout his life keep on having these major impacts, and he's introduced to all these different people, and his life and the town he grows up in is a life that not a lot of people, as Gina said before, see up on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Barry Jenkins and the writer's life. That was something which was they wanted to reflect back as well.
What you looking at me like that for? What, man? Come on, you just drove down here? Yeah. Who is you, Sharon?
For a long time, try not to remember. Try to forget all those times.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you're gonna be. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
You won't tell him why the other boys kick his ass all the time.
What's wrong?
I'm good.
No, I'm seeing good, and you ain't it.
Remember the last time I saw you?
Don't listen.
To who, Ma? Huh? To you?
Who is you, man? I ain't seen you in like a decade. It's not what I expected. What did you expect?
What a powerful film. Mm-hmm. That is the trailer for Moonlight, the new film from writer-director Barry Jenkins, and we'll be speaking with Jenkins later in the program. But, I mean, you can just tell it's a powerful film. It's an aggressive film, and it's about identity, isn't it?
That earlier scene, again, we can't stop talking about this film, but yes, on or off. And there is a moment when in that first chapter of the character of Little, when he asks a question, in fact, he asks two questions of the male kind of father figure, over the table. And Dan, I know you were hooked in at that moment. Well, I don't want to spoil it for people.
We're not going to give too much away about that scene. But can I say, I did struggle to get into this film a little bit at the beginning. It took me a while to kind of catch on. But it was that moment, the scene that you're referring to, where I was like, wow, that was actually one of the most powerful films that I've seen in cinema for a very, very long time. It was such a simple scene and very kind of barely spoken, but it was so powerful. And that was the moment that I kind of realized this is a big film and this is an important film.
The cast of this film cannot be talked down in any way. The casting is just perfect. And that scene in particular, you've got three people who are just so perfectly in sync with each other. For me, that was also the moment where I went, wow, I've always loved Janelle Monáe as a singer. And I've always thought she was great, but she's actually a movie star. Like, she's actually got a presence. She's in the movie for,
and she's
what,
stunning
10 minutes
in the movie, isn't she?
She's,
as well. She's
incredible.
Yeah.
I walked away from that just going, she is just mind-blowing. But everyone in it is great. And the three actors who portray Chiron are just so perfect. And I love, you find out later on after in a couple of the interviews that Barry Jenkins has done, is that he purposely never let them meet each other on set.
Yeah,
because he didn't want any of them to try and replicate each other. And that really comes through because he evolves in such a different way.
And you know what that actually shows? That shows a great director, because the physicality of each of those characters to play the one role was spot on.
Perfect.
And that was, for me, the most powerful moment of the film. And that's all Barry's work right there.
And you're right, Conrad. I think Trevante Rhodes is great as Black. I think for me, Ashton Sanders really steals the show as Chiron in that middle segment.
Yeah.
And Alex Hibbert as well as Little is just fantastic. The cast is solid the whole way through, and that's why we're seeing them nominated for all kinds of awards.
Yes, give them all the awards, I say.
You're listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Outtakes here on Joy 94.9, and we are mulling over and digging deep into the wonderful new film, Moonlight.
And what a powerful film. Yeah. And you know, so much of that is thanks to Barry Jenkins, who really got this project off the ground, who wrote the project. I mean, as Terrell has said publicly, the play was written, you know, over 10 years ago, and it wasn't optioned. No one took it on until Barry Jenkins came along. Mm. And Barry Jenkins has really brought himself to this project as well. The play, it's a two-act play, and Barry Jenkins has really spread that over three acts and has not diluted the story at all. In fact, he's added a number of really important, really significant themes and elements and plot lines to this story.
Masculinity is one of the main kind of themes that run through it. And I found this quote from him there. He says, "The film is inherently intersectional, and one of the sections is about masculinity and how the world projects this idea of masculinity in particular on young African-American men." And I think if you take that as a way of framing the movie before you see it, it's a really good way for you to kind of understand the world you're stepping into without it being what you think it might be portrayed as, because I think there's a little bit of an issue, and you were saying it before, about people might go, oh, it's that type of film.
Yeah.
It's an art house film. I think some people might go, oh, it's a Black urban film about crime, or it's, you know, and it's all of those things and none of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's about all of these intersections within identity.
Exactly.
So it's about Black identity overlaid with gay identity, overlaid with a very kind of Miami-specific identity, overlaid with the identity of people who grow up in these drug-fueled environments. Mm. There's just so many layers to the kind of identity that it mediates, which does make it really, really universal.
Absolutely.
And unique, though. We walked out of the cinema and we all had different takes on different scenes. Some of us wanted to linger in certain scenes more, and others of us were quite happy where we were left to kind of meander and take it into our own minds. That's what I loved about it. You know, we were talking about the music, which we'll touch on later. Music didn't even affect me until the last chapter of the film, yet it's constant throughout the entire film. That's what I love. It is universal, but I think all of us are going to connect to very different aspects of this story, and it's just brilliant. Can't wait to see it again.
Conrad and I sat down with Barry and had a chat with him. It was actually, he's so passionate, isn't he?
Yeah, he was the perfect interview. He's one of those people that, you know, we had our questions and we knew what we really wanted to ask him, but we didn't have to lead him anywhere. He's not only because he's spoken about the film as much as he has, obviously, already, but he is in love with what he has done and he understands the importance of it without being a dick about it.
Yeah.
So that was, I think, you know, our interview with him really sums up his passion for it and his understanding of what he'd done. Great to have you on the phone and congratulations again about the film.
Thank you.
It's been 8 years between your first film and Moonlight. It's been pretty well documented what you've done in between. But what was it about this story in particular that pushed you back into writing and directing another feature film?
You know, part of it was, I've been doing this since I graduated film school in 2003. And I've never really, worked on anything that was set back in my hometown, that was about where I'm from.
Right.
I didn't know the playwright Terrell McCraney growing up, and yet, you know, we had such similar lives, and but definitely were physically in a lot of the same spaces for a time. That I just found that the characters he had created and the story he was telling was just so true to my memory of what my life was like growing up in this neighborhood in Miami. I just fell in love with it. And I also saw an opportunity to illuminate a struggle that unfortunately just isn't depicted in arts and letters as often or as frequently or as authentically as I think is needed.
I definitely want to come back to that struggle and flesh that out in a moment, Barry. But first, what was it in particular about the story that resonated with your own experiences growing up in Miami?
You know, it was, in the most obvious way, the character played by Naomi Harris, the character Paula, this mom who's addicted to crack cocaine, you know, that was an element that Terrell and I shared in our biography, which is not surprising considering when we grew up and how we grew up in this particular time and place. It's just crack cocaine was rampant. It destroyed the community that we grew up in. Mm. And I just saw so much of that in my own biography, and I saw it in Chiron as well. And again, those things are very socio-political in a certain way. I also just thought he just captured so well, you know, the feeling in the air of living in this place that he describes, and I would agree, as a beautiful nightmare. You know, it was a very tough place to grow up, but oh man, it was just filled, overflowing with natural beauty.
You're talking about there about the parallels with your own life. I guess, you know, it's fair to say a lot of people are talking about this as a gay story and a lot of elements to it. As a straight man, how did you feel about bringing that story, I guess, or that element of the story to the screen?
It was difficult, you know, and I only say that because the project almost didn't happen, for me at least. You know, I'm a big proponent that there are certain stories that need to be told from a first-person perspective. And there was just certain elements of this character's identity that I just could not honestly say I had a first-person perspective on. And I thought, you know...
What were some of those elements, Barry?
Well, I'm straight, you know, and Chiron, the character, is gay, and he's struggling with his sexuality. You know, I don't know what that feels like, you know. I don't know what it feels like to walk down the sidewalk holding another man's hand and have people judge you for holding another man's hand. You know, as a black person, I know what it feels like to walk down the street holding the hand of someone of another race and get stares for that. But it's not apples to apples. Now, I also consider myself, you know, an ally for LGBTQ causes, you know, someone who empathizes with the LGBTQ community. And I remember when Facebook, you know, when the Supreme Court thing passed here in the States, you could change your profile to a rainbow flag. You know, that's great. It's cute, you know, but that's a passive empathy, you know.
Yeah.
That's a passive allyship. And as a storyteller, I saw an opportunity to be an active ally. And I felt like if I could capture Terrell's voice, you know, because Terrell is openly gay and sexuality is a big component in his work. Like, if I could just preserve his voice and capture his voice, I could wed that with my allyship, and then I could take authorship of the piece. And once I did that, you know, I just put it all in the rear view. And then I just focused on who is Chiron, what does he yearn for, what does he need, and just sort of worked at ground level from there.
As some of those issues around gay visibility and gay representation and being an active ally of the gay community, is that part of what you're referring to when you say there's a broader struggle that the film is tapping into?
I think absolutely, for sure. Now, again, when I'm making a film, I try not to intellectualize or make any of this stuff academic. And I don't mean academic in the Sherlock Holmes sense, but, you know, I'm not trying to create a movie that will inspire think pieces. However, you know, because of the lack of these characters, because of the lack of characters who are centered in narratives, who have this background, there's no doubt that there is an added importance purely because of the lack. And I was aware of that. And the pressure was in getting it right, you know. I don't know what it's like to sit on a beach, you know, and kiss another man for the first time, you know. Terrell does, you know, and I was very careful about trying to preserve the energy that Terrell felt was appropriate for that sequence. But it's one of those things where it's like, I have to get this right, you know, because it's very important, because we don't see this very often, you know, and yet people have lived this.
I guess that does kind of tap into the broader debate that we're seeing in Hollywood now about diversity on screen. And there are many layers in which the film kind of does tap into the debate, but clearly it wasn't your intent to tap into that debate. You know, your intent was just to tell a powerful story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, there's one of the questions I get in Q&As often is, hey, man, there's like no white people in this movie. They're like, why did you? And I was like, well, there were no white people where I grew up. And so if I'm going to make a movie about where I grew up, there's just not going to be a lot of white people in the film. And then I do point out that there are two white people who walk by in the background of the rest, because white people have problems too.
Yeah.
But otherwise, there are no white people in the film, only because that doesn't have fidelity to the world that I grew up in. You know, everything was about trying to be authentic and speak the truth. But as far as diversity goes, you know, it's one of those things. You know, this movie started 3.5-4 years ago. That's when I first wrote the script. And so at that point, there was no Oscar so white backlash.
No.
And so to frame these films as a response to that, I think, is a bit disingenuous. And I think it's more glass half empty than half full, because it robs the creators, and I'm speaking not just to myself, I'm speaking of, you know, many of these other films that were started at the root from the feeling that these voices weren't being represented and that they were going to do something about it. And, you know, I'm a black filmmaker, and yet, you know, there are no black people at Plan B. There are very few black people at A24.
Right.
But I think they should get credit also, you know, for feeling like, yes, you know, these characters should be on the screen.
Barry Jenkins, the writer and director of the wonderful new film Moonlight, which we are, as I said before, dissecting and giving a lot of love to. One of the things that Barry mentions, and we brought it up to him, is that as a straight man, how did it feel presenting what a lot of people are calling, you know, in a kind of package it up way, a gay story? And his experience is someone who is African-American, comes from quite a poor background and everything. He explores it in a totally different way, but keeping very true to the fact that he knows that that part of the story was very important for him to represent. And he talks about that passive empathy. Am I going to try and kind of push that to the side because I'm not gay, or am I going to bring it as close as I can and show it in a way that I think it needs to be shown?
I think the more sophisticated reviews of this film actually don't talk a lot about what is gay in this film. Because, as I said to you earlier, I mean, for me, this is not a gay film. For me, this is a film about identity that has a gay romance in it and a gay subplot in it.
Yeah.
But this does not feel to me like a gay film. And when you watch a film, you can tell whether you're watching a gay film or whether you're watching a film that is perhaps a little bit broader than that. And that's, I think that's one of the reasons why this film is so successful. That could be a good thing, but it could also be a bad thing.
Yeah.
That's something that we'll talk about a little bit later in the program. You're listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I got you, I promise. I'm not going to let you go.
Moonlight is the most acclaimed film of the year.
Little man.
And now it's the winner of the Golden Globe Award for Best Picture.
Yeah, man.
Critics are raving. It's gorgeous and uplifting.
It's all love and all pride in this house.
A flat-out masterpiece.
You gon' know that I love you.
It's the best movie of the year.
It's a life.
Moonlight, rated R, now playing.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9. That was the trailer for Moonlight, the new film from Barry Jenkins, which we're spotlighting this evening. And doesn't that trailer just make you sore? Doesn't it inspire you?
You know what just stood out? Is it rated R? Is it just the drug? Well, not here. And I wonder what it's giving it the R rating in the States. Is it the drug taking? There is violence, but it's not an extreme amount of violence. I'd be highly curious to know why it's getting an R rating in the States.
Yeah, I think all of the things you mentioned would probably, however they would classify this film.
Oh, that's... Well, hopefully that just attracts more people to go see it.
Yeah.
You know, as queer people, we're trained to pick up, you know, when something is queer-coded. We're trained to know when we're watching a gay film. And that's what the early days of queer cinema were actually about.
Mm.
I think there is definitely something to be said for the innate ability that a lot of people have to see themselves on screen and to know when they're watching a film that is coded for them. I didn't have that experience when I watched this film. Nonetheless, it resonated with me very, very strongly. And that's because it is about identity and it deals with the vulnerability of identity in a way that we can all relate to.
Gina turned us on to an article recently through The Guardian, and the headline for it is, "Does Moonlight Show Gay Cinema Has to Be Sexless to Succeed?" And the article itself, you can explain it, Gina, in a better way than I can.
Look, it is just kind of saying for a mainstream audience to be a blockbuster, to get into the Oscars, what can and what can't we show on screen in order? And we know what the Oscars show us. We get a lot of actors winning Best Actor, but when it comes to winning Best Film, Brokeback Mountain, we know, lost out to there.
In quite a shock defeat, actually.
In a huge defeat. So many films that we kind of look at.
Carol.
The history of Carol.
Barely nominated, really.
The Imitation Game did pick up Best Motion Picture, I think, the other year. But when we look through the history of films, they're not winning. The actors, yes, may pick up an award or two, but very rarely do we see a film that has intimacy and that shows real sexual intimacy on the screen. Are they coming through? And it's saying, is this what's holding our films from going forward to a broader mainstream audience? So not our audience where we will go and see these films, but to that bigger blockbuster, broader audience, which unfortunately, when you do the math, that's what it's going to cost to get another film by a brilliant filmmaker made.
Look, I actually don't know.
Yeah.
I think that does tap into what I was saying earlier, which is that this is not necessarily a gay film. Mm. So is it necessary to have gay sex in this film or sex between men in this film? I don't know that it is. Yeah. And it didn't feel necessary watching the film. So I don't mind that it's perhaps not as sexual as some other gay films are, certainly some of the less distributed films.
Mm.
If we do get to a stage where we need to exclude certain components of gay or queer life from films so that they get broader distribution, I think that's unfortunate.
Yes, yeah.
I think that's a problem, but I don't think that's what this film does.
No, and this film doesn't suffer from that.
No.
I think that's the great thing about it. I understood what the journalist was trying to say with this article. I didn't necessarily agree with it.
No.
Particularly in some of the parts when it was saying, you know, this movie did this and it didn't get anywhere as near as much coverage as this. And I was like, you're talking about something that is so different and so separate that if you start just saying, well, if this has got gay content in it and this has, why isn't this getting the same reception as Moonlight? You've missed the point.
Yes.
And Barry really does explain that in so much more more articulate way than I can, as well as a really wonderful story about him and why this film is so important to him.
Let's talk a little bit about then the characters in the film. Sharon is such a complex character. The name struck me as very familiar. Of course, it's a mythological name and it means wounded, literally, but the character is far more complex than that. Were you drawing on some of those elements of wounding and learning and teaching?
Yeah, I was, but when I say I have to give all praise to Terrell McCraney. You know, the names of the characters all originated with Terrell. You know, Terrell's a guy who grew up just like Sharon, and yet, you know, he's a MacArthur genius. Right now, he's the head of the playwright program at the Yale School of Drama.
Wow.
And there's actually an article that was written on Vulture or BuzzFeed, one of those, that broke down the name Chiron. Well, actually, I pronounce it Chiron because I told him, you know, my mom, if she saw that, would say Chiron. Chiron. I mean, Chiron, I think, is the proper pronunciation. But yeah, he put a lot of meaning into the character's name. And I love that over the course of the film, everyone else is naming Chiron but Chiron. It's just another one of those ways. This idea, this journey for him to self-identify is constantly a struggle.
One of his more pertinent struggles, certainly for me, viewing the film, was his struggle with masculinity and the way that that's developed over the course of the film. Was that something that you brought to the project?
It was, and because, you know, the source material, it ends the phone call between Kevin and Black. And so, you know, Terrell, I think because of... You know, a lot of the stuff is semi-autobiographical for Terrell, and so there was a Kevin in his life that he never reconnected with. And I thought, well, shit, these two characters need to sit down. So after this phone call, he is going to get in his car, he is going to drive to Miami, and they are going to sit in a diner, and they're going to look at each other. It's like, it has to happen. It's got to happen. And this actor, Trevante Rhodes, came in to audition for the role of Kevin, actually, for Andre Holland's part, not for Black.
Oh, really?
And I judged him, and I judged him right away. He walked in, he was even more buff than he is in the film. I had him lose, like, 20 pounds. I was like, you cannot walk on screen looking like this, you know, which actually was worse, because then he walked on screen nothing but cuts and muscles. All the women on set, when Trevante showed up, because his first day of work, it was just him and his boxers working out around his apartment, and nobody ever spent time at Video Village. And then all of a sudden, all the women on set are gathered around Video Village, and a few of the men. But, you know, when he walked in, I judged him. I thought, this guy can't, there's no way he can conjure the vulnerability and sensitivity I think this character needs. And he was auditioning for the wrong part. But then, out of respect for the process, I let him read. And this thing happened where I realized, holy shit, I got this guy wrong. He was so sensitive and so vulnerable. And I thought, if the audience can take the same journey I just took in this audition, then we will have won. I think we will have deconstructed this presentation, this performance of hypermasculinity.
Absolutely.
And the whole point was for the audience to see this guy on screen, and the first time you see him, I mean, Trevante is yoked.
Yes.
And he's got that grill. I mean, it's aggressive. And yet, you know, 10 minutes into that chapter, you start to see Alex Hibbert in his face. Mm. And I'm like, this is what the film is about. So we sit across from people all the time, and we would not imagine that guy, that yoked, with that grill and that scowl, used to dance in the mirror in elementary school. You know, we deny him, you know, of that part of his history because we beat, you know, we beat into these young men. I can only speak to the young men from the world Terrell and I grew up in.
Yeah.
That this is how a man walks. This is how a man talks.
Yeah.
This is how a man looks at another man. This is how a man does not look at another man. You know, and the more you do that, the more it becomes more difficult to resist. And you start to perform masculinity in a way where you don't get told what to do.
America is in a real state of flux at the moment, politically and culturally.
Yeah, bro.
and culturally, and we're all, you know, all of the eyes of the world are on it at the moment. And I guess, where do you think Moonlight fits into all of that? And why do you think it's resonating with audiences so much right now?
You know, I think it's resonating because, you know, we just try to, I think very authentically, capture what it felt like to be us, you know? This conversation about the movie being somehow inherently universal. Everyone can see themselves in the film, and that was not the point. Mm. The point was for everyone to go back to Miami and see the blocks we grew up in and to see Chiron. That was the point. As far as what it means in America today, you know, because of when the film was released, you know, it was out for about 3 weeks before the election, and now it's been out, you know, for like a month and a half post-election.
Right.
And I think the currency with which people are engaging the film has radically shifted. You know, I think people were seeing the characters in the world before the election. I think after the election, people are seeing it as a confirmation of the many variations of what the American experience is. Because what the election has told us is there's one way to perform. It's about performing masculinity. There's one way to perform Americana. And it's like, No. There are so many people in this country who are going through so many different struggles. And most of those struggles are about them trying to define for themselves who they are and resisting the world telling them who they have to be. And I think the election has in some ways created a false mandate that we have to be a certain version of America. And I think people have rallied around the film as affirmation that, no, that is not the case. You know, you can be wherever you want to be. You know, this country is for all of us.
In 12 days' time, the Academy Award nominations will be announced, and based on...
12 days, really?
Yeah, 12 days. And you know, the way that this film's going at the moment, I think you're going to get a few nominations, which is really, really well-deserved. What does that mean for you as a filmmaker, and what does it mean for you personally?
As a filmmaker, you know, very literally, it means, you know, the voice of the film is carried farther anytime any of these awards things happen. And as someone who's gone 8 years between projects, it means that hopefully there'll be more people who will be excited to work with me. So there's that. I think personally, you know, I grew up like the character in this film. And people from this world simply do not win or get nominated for Academy Awards. They just don't. I think if someone like me, someone like this character, Chiron, is nominated for an Academy Award, it shows, you know, there is no ceiling, you know? You know, everything is possible. And I'll tell a story from the filming of Moonlight. We filmed in the neighborhood I grew up in, you know, in Liberty City, this very tough neighborhood in Miami. And over the course of filming there, you know, the drug dealers shoot out all the streetlights. And we had a few night scenes in this neighborhood, so we put up all these lights. And the parents were like, oh, my God, we're so glad you guys are here. The kids can hang out at night because you guys put up your lights. Mm-hmm. And then I remember one day I looked back at Video Village, and, you know, I don't sit in my chair very often on set. And there were these kids sitting in my director's chair, and the producer was pointing at me like, yeah, that's the guy who's from here. And all I could think was, I didn't get into this until I was 22. I was already halfway through my undergrad. And it was because I'd never seen anybody who looked like me or who was from where I was from doing this. And now this kid who's 10 years old, 12 years old, has seen me and knows I'm from here doing this, and maybe they'll get the bug. So I think if I were nominated for an Academy Award, personally for me and for the place that I'm from, it would just mean a confirmation that, you know, we can do this shit too. Awesome. Pardon my French, I know it's radio.
No, awesome.
Look, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you, Barry, and both Conrad and I know we both agree. We hope you don't just get nominated, we hope you win. So best of luck for the award season.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Barry Jenkins there, the writer and director of the very wonderful Moonlight, which we hope is going to win all of the awards.
And what a powerful film.
That story at the end really sums up that representation and masculinity discussion we were having, because, you know, the way that he describes being able to show children in his neighborhood that, you know, they could be like him one day and actually make a movie.
Yeah, to create that mirror of himself is just incredible. Glorious.
It's funny because that does tie in really neatly with some of the more central themes in this film, particularly the idea of identity and figuring out who you are and how we figure out who we are and how social discourses, these pervasive social discourses and ideas about things like masculinity in this film actually really affect how we see ourselves. I think that's why the names in this film are so significant.
Yeah. Mm.
Chiron, Little, Black. Mm. The really interesting name for me was Chiron, and that came up in the interview because Chiron in Greek mythology is associated with being wounded and also with healing. But the mythical character Chiron, who was Hercules' teacher, could heal people, but not himself. And I think that's such an interesting allegory for this film.
Just another message to pull out. And I think that's the wonderful thing about this. And as a person, he was so friendly and giving and such a great interview.
Oh, yeah.
But there's this other thing, you know, listening to him, a straight black man talking about his experience. And while I'd never equate the experience of a queer person with that of a black person, it was really interesting how he referenced the similarities in what he was trying to do and what he was trying to represent, but from his perspective. And that was really refreshing as well. And it kind of opens up this whole way for us that you can see that stories can be told in different ways by different people, but encompass so much really great messages and themes. And that's what this film does.
And again, setting an example for men to not be afraid of expressing you know, emotion yes. and yeah. expressing intimacy and love for a character that he's helped put to screen that isn't exactly like him, that doesn't love the same way as him, but loves just as much.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's, thinking about it now, it is such a powerful film, and it's so well crafted too, because in so many ways, the first half of this film is about learning to be a man, you know, that brutal debate, that brutal curve that we all kind of follow at some point, learning to be a man. And then it's about learning how that's really, you know, a damaging kind of journey, and how the real journey is to learn to be vulnerable. And I just think that's such a powerful message, and so timely too.
Mm.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to see this again.
Look,
now yes. that we've been talking about it, I want to see it again right now.
Just quickly, it did win Best Picture, Best yes. Drama Picture at the Golden Globes. Is it going to scoop Best Picture at this year's Academy Awards?
Oh, you know, it's that kind of thing. If this is going to be that that little film that could, I'm hoping for big things. I would love for him to get something for this, whatever that may be. Mm. But, you know, I think the thing that's really exciting for me is what will he do next?
Mm.
We did look at Lion last week. I think Lion is definitely a contender, Luke Davies, for best adapted screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually think that it's got stiff competition from this film.
Right.
I think Jenkins' adaptation of the play is really masterful here. So I wouldn't be surprised if it takes that.
I hope he gets something, anything.
I hope so,
and,
too.
You know, like we said earlier tonight, they are two novice filmmakers.
Yeah.
Lion last week, first feature film. This is the second for Jenkins. Mm. Can this please show the world that we need to be encouraging new filmmakers to tell their stories?
Exciting.
You are listening to Outtakes here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, where tonight we have been really celebrating the theatrical release of Moonlight, the powerful and aggressive and really important and timely and masterful work from award-winning writer and director Barry Jenkins.
So I think we can clearly say it's a film we'd highly recommend all audiences go and see. And I really do encourage my sisters to go and see it, because too many times I go to MQFF and there's a film with a gay male protagonist and there's a film with a lesbian female protagonist. And it's like high school where, you know, the girls line up on one side, it's like the dance, and the boys on the other, and they never meet in
never
between.
Never the twain shall
meet. Please, please go see this film. It is glorious, absolutely glorious.
Interestingly enough, we've been talking a lot about representation this evening and how this film really taps into the broader debate around representation. And that was something we saw play out in our local film industry quite heavily last year. A number of really significant reports coming out from Screen Australia, for our purposes in particular, Seeing Ourselves, which was fundamentally about how certain minority groups in society are not represented enough on the screen and behind our cameras. And one of those groups was LGBTIQ people.
Yeah, so the screen ourselves, report Screen Australia released, was actually looking at local television and diversity in television. So it was looking at cultural diversity, disability, Indigenous and LGBTI representation. So, and we weren't at all surprised with the statistics that came out of it.
No.
And we even had an interview with, we even spoke to Screen Australia about the report.
We did. A number of times, actually.
A number of times. And I think, Daniel, you put a question to them saying, similar to Gender Matters, what are you going to do about this? And we weren't given an answer yet. I think they heard you because, as we touched on a few weeks ago, there is a great scheme that Screen Australia are actually, well, the applications are open now and they close on the 2nd of February for seeing ourselves developing the developers. So this is a, I think it's a 3-day opportunity for, it looks to be emerging and entry kind of new, entry level kind of filmmakers and creatives and executives that work in the area of creating media.
Mm. Yeah.
And not just film and television. It's quite a broad criteria of community-based artists that they're trying to attract. And from what I can see from the application, and they'll be doing these like full-on 3-day workshops, looking at building craft and analytical skills, but also looking at how to activate, you know, the relationships of these performers to get out and be, I guess, making the right network connections to be getting these stories out. I could be telling, you know, Screen Australia, I hope I'm saying this all.
Well, look, it's a 3-day practice-led workshop led by some really notable and influential people in the industry. There's no doubt that for any emerging LGBTIQ filmmaker, you know, we talk time and again on this program about how important representation is. It's come up a number of times this evening. We know representation is important, and representation starts with the people making what we see on the screen. So that's why it's so important. And thank God Screen Australia have
acknowledged that
and are actually doing something about it. So, you know, there's an opportunity here, and I really do hope that people within our filmmaking community sees that opportunity.
And one of the nicest things about this, it's not just a 3-day forum where they're going to talk at you. It looks like they really want to engage the fortunate participants to kind of work with them about what their CV is going to look like, what their goals are, and unlock those opportunities. So it actually, I might actually put an application. No, I'm kidding. it actually looks good, but it is looking at that broader exec, sales agent kind of market as well, because sometimes they are the blockers to getting our stories on screen.
I think the exciting thing about this is that we are so overdue for some really great queer Australian content, and you know, out of this could come an Indigenous version of Moonlight, or it become, you know, the next Aussie queer classic, some little nugget of a film that captures the, you know, the community and the greater public. You know, Priscilla can only sustain us for so long, people. I really want to see something really amazing come through, and it's really a credit to Screen Australia that this may be something that helps that happen.
So we're going to put a link up to the application page on our Facebook page, the Outtakes Facebook page, which is Joyful Outtakes, so Facebook.com/Joyful Outtakes. Do like the page, take a look. We post, you know, a number of really great articles and a lot of really important content. But now actually is also a really good time to plug our podcast page, because we have our podcaster Conrad in the studio, who does a really great job at getting all of our programs available for listeners right around the world.
Most of the time.
And then he likes to tease us with the outtakes every so often on that anniversary show. Yeah. Thanks for that, Conrad.
Outtakes of the Outtakes is the best. So spread the word. Look forward to
A really a powerful film. You know, we've said it ad nauseum. Gina, how many stars out of 5?
I would happily give it 5.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, Conrad? I'm like 4.5.
Really?
But I think if I see it for a second time, now that we've talked about it so much and all the other little bits and pieces, yeah, I'll be nudging a 5.
See, I agree. I think seeing it a second time, I'd get so much more out of it. Not that I didn't get a lot out of it the first time. I'm going to give it 4 stars. I don't think it's a perfect film, but I think it's a really important film and a really powerful film. And, you know, I really do hope that it does well at the Academy Awards. There's always, you know, a few art house films. And we said already that, you know, it's not strictly an art house film, but
It'll encourage an audience that's scared of an art house film to see it if it wins awards, and that's almost sometimes what it needs.
So next week, we're changing gear. We're looking at the Mardi Gras Film Festival, which is kicking off in just a few weeks' time.
Exciting.
Always so much going on. That's it for another week on Outtakes.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.